And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And regular listeners to the show, Andy, will understand there's a pretty set format to the show. There's often, you know, a brief moment in our feelings before we get down to the real meat and potatoes of analysing players and play from the weekend's game, you know, and really digging deep into what happened and why. I don't really feel like doing that this week.
Well, that's a shame because I've got a few thoughts on it, but Nick, let me just tell you, before we talk about anything, but we talk around the issue, let me just tell you something about the game.
Mm.
It was a miserable watch. But
yes, yes. Hashtag analysis.
I death watched it till the end. And
oh, good. God bless you for doing so.
Well, you know, podcasting demands certain standards, Nick, especially unpaid amateur podcasting. But the bit of the game I weirdly enjoyed the most was when the 100-point margin came up, and we really cracked in after that. Like, there was clearly the game evened out. You could tell that they were invested. Like, they weren't just going to let... Because we were three down at that stage. And there was a chance. You know, I think I've sent you a text with about when we were down 25 and our third player went out. I was going, oh, yeah, this is, you know, this could be 100. And I got over to 100.
Very bad. Yeah.
And they kicked on the turn to get back the 100. And the leader of that charge was Morris Rioli. And I was really enjoying his industriousness.
Well,
and then, of course,
you've enjoyed his work for the whole game, for the whole season.
And indeed. Sorry.
Honestly, it's made me a bit jittery.
About like, enjoying anyone?
Well, do I mention Kane McAuliffe? Like, he's
but
have a light tower fall on top of him.
And then, obviously, self-evident, what I said then was slightly incorrect. We were two down, and then Morris got injured. But, yeah. It was like, we just can't have nice things this season.
No.
Anyway.
No, I'd recommend to people, sort of, we'll go into the gory detail, but the wonderful Sarah Black has a less than life-affirming article on the official AFL website. We could be scraping it to have 26 players for this weekend. We'll probably end up with about 28 or so, but that includes Oliver Hayes-Brown, who's currently playing in the VFA. VAFA for old Ivanhoe.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's... And Jacob Barrows, for instance, who's just come back from injury in the VFL.
Yeah.
Anyway, it feels like you had a different topic to bring up, Nick, before we delve into this game, but what was that?
Oh, look, it was just me just trying to process this game because of in a difficult season. This was the first half of the Gold Coast game played in both halves, with the exception, as you say, of some junk time at the end. And yeah, it really I found it difficult.
The Bulldog had the top three rated players on AFL ratings for the whole round.
God.
Yeah, so minus 36, minus 36 inside 50s. Actually, the midfield, the centre square and centre clearance battle was, if that happened every week, we'd be 18th. In differential, which we are on both stats, and 18th by quite a margin. But it perhaps wasn't as bad as we could have expected given the last few weeks and the quality of the Bulldogs' midfield. But, look, I've been sort of thinking
Did Adam Treloar finally come true?
Yeah, indeed. It's like, you know, often, as you said, like I've been thinking about this podcast, we often try to break the game into component parts. But when sort of... the structural walls fall apart, it becomes hard to judge anyone. We discussed this, but it is hard to judge any individual line. And Uze noticeably, I don't know, I kind of it's easy to start at the midfield because it's the easiest to measure their output, and that is obviously, you know, again, the opposition, I've already mentioned, they're all three midfielders who had the high ratings. You know, our midfielders get far less disposals, they get smashed in the clearances, etc., etc., etc. All the metrics were bad in the game. And Uze did mention that group without throwing anyone under the bus. He did start by saying we played four really good midfields in his press conference. I watched the Uze press conference. That's how much... But, you know, they were premiership players, and I won't name, but there was... Actually, not all of them were premiership players, but there was... The back line for the first time really did, I thought, fall apart. You know, and Vossie had his led the game in intercepts, so good on him. But there was some structural things. There was some things of what you talked about, I think, last week or the week before, about teammates not trusting each other, and dump kicking might have been a tiny bit of head ducking. Like, there was, it just, this was the first time I really felt the back line fell apart. And you know, you're minus 36 in the forward entries. It's going to be pretty hard.
It's a tough day.
Yeah, but I mean, our forward line was anemic. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough to single anyone out, but I do think it starts in the midfield. It's so hard to judge individuals. And even like, well, when we talk about a few of the bright spots, like I thought Hugo continues to solidly improve. But, you know, it's...
Career high, six clearances for Tyler
Sonsi. Yeah. So, and, you know, his midfield moments came later in the game and sort of maybe a bit more in junk time. But it's hard to... Like, say, Toby Nankervis, Nick. Got a bit of stick. Got a bit of stick in the media for English beating him around the ground. Well... Actually, English's game didn't rate that well because some of English's stats were junk. But Toby won the ruck battle. He had far more hitouts to advantage.
Handily, yeah.
Far more. And, you know, was good inside. And with a functional midfield that was actually turning those hitouts to advantage into clearances. And Uze did say this, we got first possession a lot. Maybe we look at Toby Nankervis's game totally differently. Maybe English doesn't get, when you're not minus 100 in the disposals, maybe English doesn't get so many soft junk possessions.
English had one clearance.
But English looks great, Toby looks bad, but you know, it's just, it's hard to, the context, and when there's so much systemic failure going on, it's hard to sort of get to, like, you have to see everything in context for individual players. Because, you know, there were nine, I think the age pointed out, there were 9 to 10 premiership players out there. But it just goes to show that how much football is a team game, so to break up the component parts.
Yeah, almost. And then pretty much everyone else was under 40 games.
Yeah, and that's the sort of, it's a team that's, you know, I know there's been, but you can see also why having Taranto and Hopper like that.
Yeah, actually, it is. Everyone else, you're either a premiership player or you've played less than, or you're one of the 12 players who played less than 50 games.
Yeah, and not a single first round drop back in them, correct? Yes.
Tom Brown.
Oh, was he end of the? He was end of the first. Sorry, because it was effectively a second round pick in number because of the AFL silly system.
It was 17.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. No, I totally apologise. No, sorry. Of course it was in 17-18. Yeah, famous, semi-famous picks in football nerdom. But yeah, other than Tom Brown, like it's tough sledding. But I'm going to finish this podcast by saying that we have a chance of beating the point spread against Brisbane, Nick. So you know. But Bolton got a lot of stick early on. He fought back into the game. I wish Thompson Dow was better because sometimes I look at his frame and go, think, gee, he's got a nice frame for a midfielder.
And a nice sidestep as well.
Yeah, it's just not working though. I think Prestia, in fairness to him, he led Richmond on clearances.
Sonsi did.
Was it Contested Possession? There was some stab.
Yeah.
He did Okane.
He did. Yeah. Dan Rioli. He did lead us in Contested Possession. Only one ahead of Dan Rioli, which is. It's not so good when you're running halfback, is having to win so much of his own football, but it means there's a lot of football to be won.
So, Dean Prester by the ratings actually had a respectable game. That was the stat. I apologise. And so did Ryan Mansell, actually.
And look, look honestly, Dion Prestia not getting injured on in his return game.
So, well said.
From injury, like, it did, like. Yeah.
Small mercies.
Hopper's done it. Prestia's already done it this season. Jack Graham's. Has Jack Graham done it twice?
That's exactly what I was about to ask.
I'm having trouble keeping up. Look, Trezise did in the VFL, but that was a concussion, so we can't hold that against the medical staff. But it really. Really tough slating.
Yeah, the Graham one wasn't a good look.
No.
But then, of course, we had two freak injuries that the Graham was not overshadowed by.
I know. Oh, my God. I mean, we mentioned the Rioli, Maurice Rioli. That was awful. And it's serious. And, yeah, the Sam Banks one was awful as well. And then... Mentioned Trezise in the VFL. Jacob Kaczynski spent most of the day limping around the field. And apparently, Seth Campbell and Tyler Sonzi are in some doubt this week as well from injuries they picked up during the game.
Yeah, I think the former more of a chance to miss than the latter.
Yeah.
So to say that in English, so it sounds like Seth is out, but. Sorts he might play.
Oh, look, who should be good. Although Campbell did have his moments.
Yeah, true. I wasn't overly high on his game, but yeah, I think he got a massive break from. I think it was him who got a massive break from Bolton.
Bolton.
But is there any?
He worked hard. Right
at the risk of sat.
He didn't always finish his work, but he does. He just looks like a player who's going to be useful at the MCG with some more polish. Like he's now played far more AFL games than he has. Well, actually, I don't know. Not sure he's played a single VFL game.
Oh, that's a really good point because he got injured.
Yeah,
pre-season,
he got injured pre-season last year, and he got picked round one. This season, for a kid coming off the rookie list. So, yeah.
Speaking of hardworking, and I think, to me, the most positive story, we've already talked about him a bit, is Hugo Rowse-Smith. Like, his running was off the charts.
It was,
And now that his contested possession is sort of at AFL level, I'm pretty happy with Hugo, actually.
I didn't... As someone who watches a fair bit of AFL, honestly, I didn't see it coming early in the season. But he's worked hard and got him. Well, he had a good preseason because he always has it. You know, he's an elite runner, so he always does well in that part of preseason. But his form wasn't great, and he had a little bit of slight injury interruptions. But no, it's been really good to see. Actually, I didn't. Mind Ryan Mansell's game either.
Well, I mentioned before his AFL ratings was quite solid.
Yeah, it was a big career high in meters gained for him, for not a ton of possession.
Yeah, and again, both of those guys are kind of players who, they benefit from a more even game flow.
Mm. Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Dan Rioli's going really well. I'm not sure. Not sure what else we can say. Both him and Vossi had more than 10 rebound 50s, which again is not a great stat.
No, I mean there were 71 opportunities to get rebounds. So
yeah,
rich pickings.
Yeah, bit depressing, honestly. I wanted to talk about Dustin Martin.
Please continue.
The faux concern for Dustin Martin's legacy that I've seen in a couple of places, that you know, somehow he's tarnishing his legacy of by not having the greatest season. So I did a little bit of research, Andy. You'll be pleased to know. And some of these examples we'd be familiar of, but honestly, some of them I'd forgotten. There's a lovely shot of Tony Lockett in his last season playing for Port Melbourne. Richo, of course, made an appearance for Coburg before, you know, finally finishing it up. But perhaps my favourite one was, you know, the great Royce Hart, who's, you know, perhaps the Richmond player closest to Dusty in terms of career and charisma, you know, kicked average 2 goals a game for his whole career. His final season, struggling with knee injuries, he kicked 1 goal in the first 9 games of the season on his way to a grand total of 6 before finishing up with a 1 disposal in a loss to ignominious loss to Melbourne in round 16. Like, you know, does anyone remember Alistair Lynch? Well, actually, people do remember Alistair Lynch because he tried to punch everyone in his final game. But often the ending isn't dignified. And nobody cares
about that, and not the fact that he was a mobile statue. Look, rationally, Dusty is in exactly the same category as all our forwards, as they're incredibly hard to judge.
Look, the opposite problem to the defenders.
Yeah, and look, he can't get. His days of bossing the centre square, of being anything more than a part-time centre square player, are over. But that's been the case for years.
Fine.
And it was the case last year as well. And, you know, changing your judgment on him based on the last few weeks is just silly.
It's a desperate search for a story where there isn't one.
And I will say, they just know Richmond the content, and there's not much. We really sucked. It's not a great story. but I did, and I credit Conrad Marshall, made this point to me. It's like this kind of analysis. It's like they don't ever take the fans' perspective. This is entertainment. Like, survey the Richmond fans. Are they happy that Dustin?
Do you want Dustin Martin to be playing? Yes or no? Oh my God!
Look, it is him.
You,
kicking
you
goals.
Ask any one of our children to name a Richmond player, and yeah, it's easy.
Dusty's still bringing me joy. I wish him best in his decision at the end of the year. But frankly, I hope he plays on, and I don't even care if it's for Richmond.
Whatever decision. Whatever decision, whenever he wants to make it.
Indeed. Now, I think we've given that media silly story too much credit.
Well, I've seen it. It's because I saw it 3 times. Once could have happened to anyone. Yeah. It was enough to get under my skin.
Nick, it is dark times in the media landscape where I heard David King talking about Richmond, and I thought that's the most sensible thing I've heard.
Stopped clock.
Look, he went to preseason games as well. He's a big Ryan Mansell fan. Like, I like the fact he he's trying to make his niche by doing research, and there should be more of those and less hot take merchants. But moving on, I'm done with the game, Nick.
Yeah, no, I there's not much more I want to say. The loss being at the MCG, that really, like, it was a Marvel style defeat, but at the MCG, like, anyway.
Yeah, I'm just as I said on Twitter, I'm just glad it wasn't against the club I really have a strong take on about
it. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Small.
I mean, imagine if that had been at Dreamtime.
Yeah, I know.
Which, I know what that pause was, because it could happen. Hopefully we'll get some players back. Anyway, moving on.
Good times.
So, you wanted to talk about Benny.
I did.
Well, I want to talk about Benny too.
Oh, look. Have we ever talked about Benny the player in detail?
I think that's a more interesting take because, him as president is fairly, that analysis is fairly fresh in everyone's mind. So I have a take on Benny's career too.
It's what strikes me looking at it, like he was well on his way to being 22 years old when he debuted. Like it was a really, and the Richmond team that he was playing reserves for was deeply mediocre. So it was, you know, when he did debut and was reasonably competent straight away, like, you know, 21 goals in his first season, averaging nearly 5 marks a game, like that competence really did come from nowhere, and it was... And it sort of set off a pretty metronomic career in terms of its quality of, you know, he was pretty reliable for 20 to 30 goals a game until he shifted into the ruck for the second half of his career. You know, he always had big bucket hands and, you know, the lowest number of marks he had in a season was 92, so well over four a game. And yet, you know, he played in so few big games, and so many round 22 disappointments. He played it. You know, he ended up at fullback in the Essendon victory in the semi-final in 1995.
And history should remember he had a bad knee. I think he had a cracked kneecap or something like that, which is why his stats were bad for the final series. So just
I'm sure. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that for a while. But yeah, 244 games, 2 finals won. You know, career winning percentage of 45%. Like it was a long, proud, difficult career as a player, and it was sort of also of the generation. Like, you know, he studied quite seriously and worked while he was a player, and he's had a successful career. Post football before coming back.
Players union.
Players union. But he worked as a lawyer before that. But I do think all of the accolade that his leadership has received, I'd get everyone to have a look. You can look up there's a speech he did called "Our Plan for a Winning Future," the start of 2010, and I'll urge people to ring it up to, because it does. It's the long version of the famous the 5-year plan. The precursor to the 10-year plan that was so derided at the time. But there's a clarity, a refusal to accept mediocrity, and you know the vision of what was required, which was, you know, he ended the quick fix culture. he realized the hard yards that would have to be done, you know, selling home games to Cairns, like all the things that were required to turn the club around off field as a precursor to a stable, successful club on field. So, yeah, I think, look, the only thing negative about the whole situation is I'd wished they'd given us more than about an hour and a half before, between announcing he's leaving and announcing he'll be going to the Tasmanian Devils. Like, I could have used a bit more time to mourn.
I still prefer that to what Dimmer did.
Yes, that's true, actually. And he's going at the end of the season, which, if he was going straight away, I think, that'd sit a bit wrong. There's a process they're going to go through to find a successor, which, you know, I don't know. These things are extremely difficult to judge from the outside, but yeah, I think as a template for the style of leadership and vision, like, the, you know, he's never undermined the coach, he's never feuded with the coach, the club has been united off field in a way that is unimaginable to previous generations of Richmond supporters. So, yeah, I think we've got a template for successful leadership as a result of his legacy. So, yeah. But, you know, success is also not guaranteed. And, you know, there's a lot of premiership DNA that's gone out the door.
I just wanted to go back, Nick. I was letting you cook then, but...
Did I mention he was from Tasmania?
Yes, once or twice. And Northern Tasmania.
Yep.
Yes. 1994.
Yep.
Anzac Day.
Yep.
I mentioned this briefly on Twitter. But I don't know if you remember, but I was still at school, and that was a school day in those days. So.
Oh, yeah.
And I wagged class. You picked me up from outside school and drove me down to Waverley. And at that stage, I was slightly worn down by the years and years of losing.
Yep.
And we sat out there in Waverley, and I think it was an overcast day. I remember it wrongly. And
no. Yeah, I think so.
With that brutally simple Northy game plan, we just bombed it long to Benny.
Yep.
Every possible opportunity, and he was this towering figure, so tall, and he was his peak of athleticism before doing all that centre half forward play in a simple game plan wore him down. But he was a towering figure that day. And do you remember how we were the Benny chant was going? You and I were saying to each other, always kick to Benny.
Yeah, and I do remember he that.
He helped, not that I was ever didn't stop loving football, but he just helped my rekindle my football love from being strong to egg the kind of stupidity where you do a fan podcast for 10 years. And Nick, he took 13 marks that day.
Yeah.
Guess how many times he equaled or better that mark for the rest of his career?
Oh, I don't know. Probably a few.
Once.
Oh, and, there you go.
And when he was in his second act career, when he was he had 13 once before that day, but
yep.
he got 14 marks when he was playing ruck, and he didn't get a shot for goal 3 or 4 years later. But we were actually lucky to see probably Benny's, maybe not the game that Benny considered his best, but maybe Brendan's best game, and we've always loved
him.
No,
and it was. Perhaps there's some cruel symbolism in this. It was also by far his most inaccurate goal-kicking game as well, because he kicked to goal 7.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't... that was very typical of Richmond of the day, but we won. So
we won.
And
Scotty Turner, 4 goals from 4 forward.
So it was a fun game, and you and I would often wear 25 in tribute.
Yep.
I must admit, yep. Currently I'm played wearing
it.
20.
Played it. 20. Often played in 25.
Yeah, and I still wear 24 because it was the closest thing that was available to 25
yep.
at my club when they were giving out numbers. So, yeah, they're always beloved. And look, I don't want to say you summarized some of his highlights beautifully and in a different way. Cause
no, and, so... and I think what we took from him was not an overwhelming talent, but a effort and a persistence that I think we both... at least tried to emulate.
No, that's a nice way to put it. And the only thing I'll add on his CEO career, which is rightfully lauded and well documented, is hindsight has forgotten how brave a decision that was with keeping Dimmer on and getting rid of the assistants.
Oh yeah,
and it shouldn't be forgotten that that was an extremely brave decision at the time.
Yeah.
And that will be forever credit to him and Peggy.
Well, and again, a methodical process. I think, you know, that's a recurring theme to success in his era. So, yeah.
Now, Nick, I suspect listenership isn't going to be this high this week. So, I think at 30 minutes we can move on to VFL, which I thought was a brave performance. I watched the first half before life intervened, and they're really well coached.
Yeah, they
were really cracking up. Like the Bulldogs, God, like if you could mount up the salary cap of the
ridiculous.
Caleb
Daniel and Rory Lobb easily $1.5 million between the two of them. Like our whole, we'd be struggling to get near that with our whole AFL listed players.
Yeah, look, it was a Rolls Royce team in good form who did run us down. And it was probably inevitable. Obviously, Kane McAuliffe kicked a beautiful goal.
Well, he kicked two beautiful goals. And that they were so different. Like one was a snap from an impossible angle, and the other was just a beautifully stroked. Three iron from 50 metres out that, you know, flew dead straight. It wasn't McAuliffe's best game because he sort of came in and out of the game a little bit, but God, his best was so good. There was a, if people have a look at the highlights on the club website, there's a passage of play, I think, in the third quarter where he nails Sam Davidson, who had a very respectable game, it has to be said, but he just nails him on the chest on the lead. And, yeah, it's a beautiful left foot, and even showed signs of competence on the right foot, which I'm not sure you approve of, and had 10 tackles as well. So, yeah, it was an entertaining game.
Yeah. Speaking of Sam Davidson, Nick, before we mention the other Richmond players, I love his old school haircut.
Yep.
He cracks in hard.
He's very blonde.
He runs really hard.
Yep. Runs up and down the ground like crazy.
And he's got an interesting backstory. Like the commentators mentioned that he's played for four or five different clubs, but and why is that, Nick?
Well, so he he went to he played some amateurs in Melbourne. I don't think he ever got near the elite pathway, but he went to Gippsland as part of a rural placement doing a medical degree, and he actually moved up from, I think, North Gippsland League to the sort of the main Gippsland League, and then back to Melbourne this year to give the VFL a crack. And he's a fun footballer. Kicked a couple of goals. Yep. I don't know where his career's going, but he's fun. And actually Liam George as well, who's just an 18-year-old kid, who's, you know, still playing some footy in the under-18 competition. He had three nicely taken goals, and yeah, that with McAuliffe as well. Like you, three of your better players all in their first seasons in the VFL. It's a, you know, it's a tribute to the program.
Yeah, and no one could blame Davidson if he decided to treat himself if he got injured.
Look, the given. Given the injury to Rioli, I think we'll see one of Coulthart and Green. They both had really nice goals, actually. I think Steely Green's been in emergency a couple of times, but I still kind of Coulthart's form the last couple of weeks has been a little bit better for mine.
Yeah, and Coulthart's got the running. I mean, you're talking 10 possessions versus 7, so. You know, maybe Coulthart, because he's a bit older and, you know, deserves a chance to show his wares.
Yeah. It was good to have Jacob Bauer back. His marking in the back line we'd certainly missed. Trezise, I thought, was working into the game until he got injured. Samson Ryan was probably a bit like Nenk. Didn't do a lot around the ground, but won the hit-outs.
There was a moment where Lobb, a centre square, Lobb picked him up and threw him aside and
grabbed him. Yeah, Lobb got him at an important forward 50 contest as well.
I suspect that's the kind of thing. Like, it was interesting. Like, we did give him a good run in the first. We didn't have to. We had Naismith playing, but we chose to play him as first ruck, and I think that kind of... If we're wondering why he's not playing, that's why.
Yeah. Camden McIntosh toiled manfully, I thought.
He was fine.
Didn't... Well, and he was a bit slow to start, I thought, but... Worked his way into it. And look, Caleb Smith probably had his worst game of the season so far, but God, I still enjoy watching him. And I love how fast he closes on the ball. Like that, the athleticism really shows up on that. So, it was a fun game from a fun team, even with a loss.
Yes, and a much more winnable game next week. So, look, they are playing above themselves. Well, Sandringham have a positive percentage. They're 3-3, so they're not uncompetitive. No. If they continue to play above, they really feel like a team that's playing above themselves. They're fun to watch. Steve Morris, future senior AFL coach. I think he'll need to get in the box to start building his resume. This podcast is these days firmly pro Steve Morris. All right. Brisbane.
Yes. So we are heavy underdogs against one of the season's big disappointments.
Again.
Yep, the Lions, it's up at the Cabba. The Lions have 3.5 wins from 9 games, and from a club that was, you know, seemingly inches away from a premiership, and, you know, reloaded again in the off-season to get that final nudge over the top. Suddenly, I think it's all looking pretty uncertain. You know, McCluggage is their best player and headed towards free agency. They're still pretty dependent on Dwayne Zorko and Lachie Neal, who are getting up there in age.
I would have said Lachie Neal's their best player, but, you know, splitting hairs.
Absolutely. He's their best player. The Jared Berry is low-key having a very good season and is also a free agent at the end of the year. They're very good down back with Harris Andrews and Jack Payne as your sort of prime key backs. The forward, the tools in the forward line are the same mercurial group they've had for a while, Hipwood, Danaher in particular. They've got a few injuries. Ashcroft didn't play this week. They were quite
Actually, counting the three they added on the weekend, I think they'll have 12 to 13 on the injury list.
Yeah. So they're having a tough season. The promise of a Cameron Rayner breakout has once again not quite happened. I think, which is a bit of a loss for us all. I'm worried about who we've got to match up on Charlie Cameron. Maybe Nathan Broad? Question mark.
No, there are no good options here.
Yeah, but they do. You know, with Josh Dunkley as well, like they do have some grunt in the midfield, and I'm worried, you know, Hopper's another week away, quite probably. So, yeah.
I did just check. There's no one coming back. So Nick, this is my sole source of optimism is that as much as when everything collapses against the Bulldogs. And it is like we're 45 point underdogs, I believe. 43.5 right now.
Yeah.
Having Noah Bolter, and this sounds like the worst fan cliche that you read on a message board, but Noah Bolter and Dion Preston will be better for the run.
That's true. And neither of them were terrible.
No. And they weren't terrible, and they could be better this week, and that it just feels like that might be getting a bit more of the load-bearing walls back in place.
Brisbane are first in the AFL in both inside 50s and clearances per game.
Yeah. Oh, the clearance differential isn't quite as good, but yeah, it's good.
Yeah, and look, to be number one in inside 50s per game while their percentage is 100, like speaks to a certain amount of dysfunctional in how they've they've literally got the best inside 50 differential in the competition, and for all that, it's been a deeply mediocre season. So yeah, something's not quite right.
Yeah, so look, it is. I wish I could construct a better argument than do the average of performances and not just the last one. But there is a little bit of a case at the midfield, and like I said, having Bolter back does matter. And having him better for the run, I think, will help. And yeah, we've traditionally played pretty well up there.
McAuliffe seems a pretty obvious in for Jack Graham, which I think we'd be, you know,
fine with.
Yeah. Oh, excited. I would have thought. I mean, you know, obviously feeling sorry for Graham, who's, you know, having a bit of a nightmare season before he reaches free agency. But yeah, no, that.
Anyway, well. We'll be watching. We'll do a podcast next week.
Of course.
After to discuss, and hope springs eternal that we will put in a competitive performance.
And look, if not, I think we do some of our better podcasts after a loss anyway.
Yeah, I don't want to have to repeat. I could drag that analysis out about structural failure. We've kind of done it twice in 2 weeks in a row. I mean, the subtext is, you know, stop bagging the young players who look like they suck because the, you know, it's, you can't judge all the old players and Dusty. Like it is, let's just like a more buoyant boat will make everyone look better.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Tour.